Hello, heroes. Welcome to Modifier. I'm your host, Megan Dornbrock. So, I am just now home from my very first Gen Con, and it was incredible. I cannot express how amazing it was to meet so many of you and to experience the force of your support in person at the network panel and at the meetup on Saturday. You are all so kind and generous and talented and thoughtful through Twitter, and you are just the same in real life. We all call you heroes for a reason. Thank you. This week, in case you haven't heard yet, fellow network host Jim McClure is launching his first game on Kickstarter called Reflections. Reflections is a two-player storytelling RPG about how two samurai have come to their final duel. There's a bunch of great actual plays in the show notes, from shows like Party of One, RPG Academy, She's a Super Geek, and One Shot. But the reason I'm talking to Jim, and to their art director Palomi Pratap, is because Reflections is a reworking of Toby Abad's game, A Single Moment. We talk about how Jim's project went from a relaunch of Toby's game to a totally separate game with Toby's blessing and support, and how Jim and Palomi have worked to craft Third Act Publishing's first game to be the experience Jim was after. Let's get to the show, because we all know Jim knows how to tell it. I'm joined this week by Jim McClure and Palomi from Third Act Publishing to talk about Reflections.
Yes.
So if you guys actually want to introduce yourself and what you do sort of at Third Act, we'll start with Jim, who is probably a complete stranger to listeners of the show.
Never heard of you. No one on the One Shot Podcast Network has ever heard of me. Yes, I'm Jim McClure, and I'm so happy to be here on Modifier, which is the best interview podcast on the One Shot Podcast Network. Sucking up to the host today, yes. Yeah. we're here to talk about my first ever Kickstarter called Reflections, which is a game of dueling samurai. And of course, I am the co-owner and originator of Third Act Publishing, which is a publishing company which is going to design and produce its own games. And this is our first one. It's called Reflections, and it's live on Kickstarter as we talk and as this thing airs. So that's kind of what we're here to talk about, I think, hopefully. Awesome. Or maybe you'll ask me more questions about homeschooling. Who knows?
I could. Jim, are you co-owner in the same way that you're a co-host, or is there somebody that I have, like...
No, there is actually someone that does actually have true other ownership. My silent partner, as I call him, Jim Merritt, who has worked on the game as well, does all of our website stuff and co-owns Third Act Publishing with me. Yes.
Hi, other Jim. And Palomi.
Hi, everyone. I'm the art director at Third Act. I've been working on a couple projects with Jim and Jim, as they are known fondly. I think my favorite thing about Reflections, honestly, is that it's such a Jim project. Like, Jim, yes. I remember you were talking to me about it, and I was like, oh my god, this is such a Jim project.
Everyone keeps saying that. I'm hoping that's a compliment.
It is. It definitely is.
Your brand is strong, Jim. That's
yes.
Just laying down those consistent threads.
Yeah. No one is surprised. So one of the things that I like to do is solicit questions from listeners, and those usually come up later in the show. But as I was soliciting for this show in particular, the response was less specific questions and more just, yes, all, how do... game, Kickstarter, what is happening? So I think the idea for this show is to go into as much detail as you guys are willing to give on how you acquired this game, how you changed this game for publication, how you're handling this Kickstarter, how you've done all this, because it is your first time doing this, right? So it's, I'm sure there's been a lot of emotion, a lot of panic, a lot of how do that our listeners are experiencing right now with whatever projects they may be working on.
Yeah.
So that's the plan.
Okay. Yeah. Well, see, now I'm just going to ramble, and you're going to have to reel me in on this, Megan, because I will. Because that's obviously a very, very broad question. So I guess we should start with just a little bit of clarity as far as what we've done. Or I should say, who does what on this project? Of course, like I said, I am sort of lead designer of the game itself. I'm doing the bulk, the overall majority bulk writing of the game. game itself, the rules, the mechanics, the design, the playtesting, all of that has sort of fallen on my shoulders because it is a very, very gym project, and that's very much true. But my talents are very, very limited. I understand how game mechanics works. I understand how storytelling works. I understand how to talk into a microphone, and that's about like where my talents end. So what Third Act Publishing has is a group of people, of very, very talented people, people that have actual talent and can do like actual things that confuse me, like layout and art direction, which I didn't even know was a thing that you needed, and illustration and all of the nuts and bolts of running a campaign like this. And that's why Palomi is part of our team, and that we are very, very, very thankful for you, Palomi. Yes, because I think your official title is art director, but the unofficial title is guru of all the things. I think that's right, isn't it?
Yes, I think that's what Jim has called me. Jim Merritt has called me a couple of times. But yeah, I mean, like, for me, this Kickstarter hasn't been much of a sort of panic situation, but I'm a graphic designer by trade, and I think the constant state for all graphic designers is a state of panic, because everything is always due, ever. Uh-huh. So it's kind of like, oh, that's a tight turnaround, and I kind of just blink at it, and I'm like, okay, that's fine. That's just me on a daily basis. So I think as far as panic and everything on the Kickstarter, not so much. It's been a little bit different for me, though, because I'm a graphic designer at my day job. But for this particular project, I've been an art director, which is a little bit different. It's kind of in the name, mm-hmm. direct the art. So we've been working with Pavanis Duran, who's a really talented illustrator, and she's been kind of taking direction from me on the kinds of things that we want illustrated, whether it's a splash page or a cover page. And it's honestly been a really fun process of me kind of talking to her about what I'm envisioning, her going off and illustrating something, and then coming back to me with like, oh, this is what I've made, what do you think? And I'm like, ah, this is really cool, or I think this should be tweaked in these ways, just to kind of be in charge of the overarching kind of look and feel that we're going for. It's a lot of fun for me to do. I'm just like, hey, this is awesome.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, Jim, with Third Act Publishing, when you and Jim decided to be publishers, did you have projects in mind, or what was the impetus?
Yes. Oh my goodness. That's the problem. I believe right at this moment, I have more projects than I'll be able to complete in my lifetime that I want to do. Like, there is so, so many. Like, just to touch on a few, even though this was actually not one of the original projects. We'll talk about that. There was Capital City, which is a board game, which is, a whole nother wonderful topic. There is RPG Solitaire, which is a card game. There's Reach of Titan, which is our RPG, that is sort of in design right now. And then there's another secret project that's going to get started working very, very soon called Satanic Panic, but we're not going to talk about that one yet.
I like that. All right. So Reflections was definitely not one of the original projects you had planned, and Reflections existed as a different game beforehand.
It did.
A single moment. Yeah.
Yes. So there's an interesting genesis of Reflections. And one of the things that, Palomi was being super, super nice when she was just talking, is not calling me out for how terrible of a person I am. Because, the entire Reflections Kickstarter came together in 3 weeks before launch. Yeah. 3 weeks, and we had a dramatic shift from one project to another, and then it was like, all right, let's go time and do this. And they didn't just go, Jim, you're insane, go away. They actually made it happen. So I appreciate that. But yeah, this game started out essentially, there was a game released by a designer called Toby Aban from the Philippines. Toby designed a game called A Single Moment, which is very similar to Reflections. It is the same core concept, which is two samurai meet on a field to duel to the death, and then they go back in time and they play through their lives. And I really, really like this game. It's a very Jim game. It's the most Jim game that's ever been made that Jim didn't make. It's great. And I really like Single Moments. So what happened was, I actually approached Toby Abad about re-releasing a single moment under Third Act Publishing. I wanted to release a single moment revised, was actually the original plan, which was he was going to co-design it with me. We were going to make a new version of the game, a reimagining of the game, and release that, do a proper Kickstarter for it, and all of that. As these things go, it actually takes a long time for people to come to decisions about what exactly they want to do. So we had about a 6 week to 2 month process where me and Toby were talking back and forth, trying to work through all the details. And what the end outcome was is we felt that it would be best to have a world where both a single moment and reflections existed, because while the core thought of a two-person RPG of two samurai dueling is the same within the games, how mechanically they go about it is completely different. They are entirely different games in that regard. You could look at it as, you know, D&D and Dungeon World both kind of do the same thing. We're going to do a fantasy RPG where you as a group of people go on adventures to kill things and get loot. And that's kind of what both the games do, but mechanically they approach it entirely differently and give a different feel within those mechanics. So we kind of ended up with the same thing with reflections in a single moment. Toby's been completely awesome throughout the whole process. He's actually come on and is still helping me co-design reflections to get it, you know, just perfect for everyone, or as close to perfect as a samurai can be, I suppose. He's even supporting reflections to a degree that he is going to provide free PDF copies of a single moment to all of the backers of reflections. So that way, the people that are backing this project can actually have both experiences.
Oh, wow. That's incredible. I just went looking for it. And you can still get a single moment on, you know, as a PDF through like DriveThruRPG or wherever else he may have it up. So just to hear that he is working that closely and is that supportive of this game that is so similar is really awesome. And I think makes a lot of people feel better about it.
Yeah, because it's kind of an odd thing. You know, obviously, a single moment just came out. I mean, honestly, a few months ago, it really did. And that's when I got a whiff of it and then started talking to Toby about doing it this way. So we really wanted to present it in a way that would give everyone the best possible experience. And I mean, we work very close together. I think me and Toby have talked, I believe, every single day since the launch of the Kickstarter, just about every single day for the week going into it. So he is very, very closely tied to this project, and we're very closely tied together.
That's awesome. And so we don't have Toby here with us today, which is a little bit of a bummer, but he's literally a world away here. But could you tell us a little bit about how a single moment works mechanically?
A single moment or reflections?
A single moment. We'll start with that one.
Okay. So how a single moment works is it's a game that's based on you start the game with a scene of your two samurai coming together, as I described before, and then you flash back in time and play through a series of different scenes. There's, I think, three official scenes within the book that you can do sort of in any order. And what happens is you switch back and forth between GM duties on each scene. So one person will act as the GM, and then one person will sort of be like the player. And in each scene, whenever there is sort of a choice or something that a character would need to traditionally roll a dice for, you know, you think about Dungeons and Dragons or any of the other tabletop games, whenever you'd be called on to roll a dice, what happens is the GM person in that scene decides the outcome. And if he decides in favor of himself, then the other person gets essentially a dice. If he decides in favor of the other person, he gets a dice. And you play through until you hit seven different of these, what are they called, choices. And once you've divvied out the seven choice tokens, that's sort of the end of your scene. Then you each roll, and based on your roll, you accumulate edges or you accumulate scars, and you play through the scene sort of building these things up. Then once you get to the final duel, what happens is you sort of do a play-by-play with your different pools of dice and edges and scars, and you play all the way through until one dies or possibly neither person dies. And that's sort of the end of the game. And that's sort of the core of how a single moment works, which I think is really a well-designed system.
Okay. And so it is still very much about these scenes that you're building together.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely. And that's, of course, a very skimming, you know, there's also a, a deck of cards, actually a couple decks of cards that are involved with it. One of them are the Seven Tenets of Bushido. So you each draw one of those and use one of those as influence. At the beginning of play, you draw one as sort of the overall influence throughout the entire game. And that's the so it's a skimming over of everything that's involved, but that's sort of the core concept.
Yeah, no, that's very cool. And Jim likes samurai, so this appealed.
Yes, it did.
How did you find this game?
As funny as the wonderful, weird little world of RPGs are, I was on the hashtag chat room for life of the Misdirected Mark podcast, and someone mentioned it there. They were like, hey, Jim, I heard about this game called A Single Moment. It seems like a game you would be interested in. Funny that. So I went.
Yay, friends.
Yes, right. So I looked it up, and sure enough, I was like, oh, look at that. It's a game of dueling samurai. I must have that now. So I hit the little button on DriveThruRPG, and a couple days later, the book showed up. And then I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. I run a podcast. I have an excuse to talk to people that doesn't seem weird. So I sent Toby a little email of, hey, got your game, love to come on the podcast and talk. We talked. And then literally at the end of that conversation, I sprung on him. So I'm like, hey, so what do you think about a re-release of this game? And it sort of all developed out from there.
So the idea to re-release it, was that because you had ideas to alter and modify the game, or just to get it more exposure as it was?
We're going to talk about the business of RPGs on your show, right, Megan?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's do it.
So let's talk a little business here. The reality is, if you want a product to have a large amount of exposure, you need to launch that product. It is much more difficult to go in and sort of like, hey, here's my thing. It's out there in the ether. Hopefully people will find it. The real way, if you want to start building up an audience and get it out to people, is you need to have an event. And Kickstarter is amazing for making the launch of a product an event. So even though A Single Moment was already out there, what needed to happen, at least in my opinion, was, okay, let's pull it back from public view for a minute. Let's redesign it. So we need to pull it back off the public purview, and we need to have a relaunch of this game. We need to have a relaunch in a big way that we can bring out and get a lot of attention focused to it. And, you know, I had a bunch of thoughts on how to do that. One was getting exposure to the game, you know, on things like One Shot and RPG Academy and She's a Super Geek and Party One Podcast and Modifier and a whole bunch of other things. The other was to bring on guest contributors like Ken Height, like John Wick, to bring in some people, you know, that have notoriety that can go, oh, this is official, this is tangible, there's people who have been in the industry 20 years connected to this project. This is something that will occur. So one of the thoughts on doing the relaunch is there's a reality of it is much harder to have a successful game that you sort of put out in the ether and then just sort of slowly try and build a community around, as opposed to having, let's have a launch, let's get 500 people that want this game, that have this game, that back this game, and then from there we have a core group of people that we can help evangelize the hobby and get the word out about the game.
Nice. Okay, so building up that hype is crucial.
Crucial.
And so it's, I mean, it sounds like Toby took that very well, you know, that whole idea.
He did. There's a lot, you know, a lot to it. And this game was very near and dear to his heart. Like I said, my original thought was actually to release this as A Single Moment revised, and not as its own game. And sort of through our lengthy conversations, it was like, okay, we see what we both want. We both want to honor what the other person wants. Let's find a way to make this happen. And the best result of what came out of 2 months of conversation is, okay, let's do this, and let's have a world where both A Single Moment and Reflections coexist.
Wonderful. And I'm not sure how many of the people listening, how many of our heroes are interested in publishing games or interested or have games that, you know, exist that they may want to publish through another party, but it sounds like the key is finding somebody to work with who loves your project as much as Jim loves samurais. So.
Yes, and how much I specifically love a single moment. I mean, there are so many. I mean, there's a lot of samurai games out there. Some of them are amazing, like L5R 4th edition. Some of them are terrible, like L5R 2nd edition. And you know, you got to have the right project that someone is passionate about. And then that's, I will say that's the one other side of it as far as the relaunch of the project. You know, when Toby put together a single moment, he did a really, really good job putting together a booklet, you know, essentially single-handedly. I mean, he did everything, I believe, except he got a little help. It was either with layout or editing from one other person, but the book is entirely put together himself, and I think he did an amazing job with that. But if you can bring in people that have very specific areas of talent, you know, like Pavonis, our illustrator, or Palomi, you know, who has an eye for art, an eye for layout, understands that kind of stuff, you know, you really get all of the wonderful different hyper specializations of people that are really, really good going into the book, which helps the production values, helps, you know, everything, you know, make it look like an official, you know, good, awesome RPG book.
I would add also that, like, where Jim's kind of love for the actual game and the sort of business aspect of it, I was able to pick up sort of the threads of that thought that he's kind of putting down, because my background is in advertising, even though I'm a graphic designer. So I've got, like, a little bit of a business background. And then kind of wherever my art expertise, as far as, like, higher level sort of thinking about things, Pavonis was really good at being able to kind of pick up that stuff as well. So it's kind of like this interconnected, like, train of thought that we're all kind of continuing throughout the project. I think that's kind of why it's been such an easy project to work on as far as, like, the collaborative aspect of it. It's a lot of fun because we're all just playing off of each other's ideas.
Awesome. Does it help in that, you know, playing off each other's ideas, and does it help having Toby having made a book already that you can play off of, or is it more helpful, or is it more hurtful in trying to, like, stay away from,
I think,
maybe things he's already done?
I think for my part and Pavonis's part, we were only familiar with what Jim was trying to do with Reflections and knew about a single moment by name and sort of basic mechanic. So I think because we were kind of allowed to focus on what Jim is trying to do with Reflections, it streamlines kind of, it allows us to focus on that particular aspect of it and bring that to life with the layout and the artwork.
Cool. And you've worked on some other games a little bit, but this is different from what you do every day.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it is. I've only, like, this year recently been working on tabletop games, but in the year that I've been working on it, it's been so much fun and so good, just because on a daily basis, I actually work in product launch, so I'm really familiar with how to launch projects just from that aspect. Mm-hmm. But what I work on is really boring compared to games, and like, it's stuff that I don't deal with on a daily basis or seek out on a daily basis by myself, but games and RPGs I definitely do. So being able to take any expertise I have in launching anything and putting it to something that I'm, like, actually inherently fond of and really excited about is a great opportunity to not feel dead inside.
Oh, no.
You hear it a lot from graphic designers that, like, freelancing is kind of the way that they keep the dream alive as an artist, because it's really easy to just feel like you're selling your soul and not doing anything. And then that sounds bleak, but really it's the only way to talk about it. Like, you do the thing that gets you paid, but then you also do the thing that is super, super fun, and it you get that balance that way.
Yeah, I feel like that can be said for a lot of creative or more creative professions, is the stuff that pays well is not necessarily the stuff that you love to do.
Right. In order to be able to do the things that you love to do, you do have to make sure, you know, you're comfortable, because otherwise, when you're living in a constant state of panic about your personal things, it is a little bit not conducive to being creative, I'm told.
Maybe. A little bit.
A little bit.
Something like a game like that is still being created, is that difficult to work on, or is that sort of the same no matter what graphic design project you find yourself working on, like things are constantly in flux?
So I think with graphic design, and this is sort of the advertising part of me, the marketing part of me that's speaking up, it's you, as long as you've got like a big idea that you're working towards, whether it's a big visual idea or just kind of an overarching concept, it's a lot easier to deal with the changes that come because you know what you're designing or illustrating towards, if that makes sense. So like with Reflections, it's at the core, it's a very emotional game that we're trying to capture in the language and the illustration. So keeping that in mind, it's easy to roll with the punches when something writing-wise gets changed or mechanically gets changed, because it doesn't affect what I'm telling Pavanis to do or what I'm trying to communicate with the way I'm laying things out.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So, Jim, now that you've got people on board to make Reflections beautiful, how is it different mechanically from a single moment? Because it is still a storytelling game between two samurai.
It is. Okay, so we have a lot of things to talk about within this category, and we're going to get about as Jim as Jim can get here.
Bring it.
It is going to be broad. I like heavy role play. This is no surprise to anyone that's heard me on the L5R, podcast that One Shot did or any of the others. I really love heavy emotional role play. It's fantastic. It's amazing. And I love story. So what I really wanted to do is to marry, my love of the aesthetic within samurai culture and Japanese culture with this heavy role play and heavy storytelling. And I wanted to essentially make a game that didn't encourage heavy role play, but demanded it. Of the only way you can play this game is if you're going to have a heavy emotional experience. And my other thought, which is going to seem way out of left field, or I should say one of my other big inspirations for it, is Up, the Pixar movie. Yes. It was a very big inspiration on this game, as it has been in my creative style for a while, because for those that have seen the movie, you know that there is about a 4-minute short, not the Pixar short that's completely unrelated, but a 4-minute prologue, if you will, to the movie that is incredibly emotionally impactful. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. But here's the magic of what that scene is. That scene showed us that in 4 minutes, we can introduce you to characters, they can go through an entire narrative and have an emotional punch in 4 minutes. We don't need a 8-session, 4 hours per play session campaign to get an emotional punch. We don't need a 4-hour play session to get an emotional punch. We know we can do it. Humanity can do it in 4 minutes. Now, I'm not good enough, because I'm not Pixar, to do it in 4 minutes, but I wanted to be able to get that emotional punch within a small period of time. In this case, it's an hour. It's the best I could do. I might be able to trim it down one day, but I want you to be able to have an emotional punch within an hour. So these are the core concepts that went into framing the game. So what I started with is, okay, if I want that to be the end result, we need to design mechanics that make that happen, and that can only allow that to happen. That's one of the other big aspects to it. So there's a couple things I looked at. One is Chuck Palahniuk, who is an author that I really, really like. One of the mechanics he does in storytelling that he enjoys is he likes to add what he calls a chorus to the story. And that is to have something that happens in the story that repeats, because when something repeats in a story, it ends with a super heavy emotional punch to it. So within Reflections, we start the game with this little like Mad Lib where we go, it was a time of blank. And I'll say like, it was a time of war and peace. And then you would go, we stand upon, and you would fill in the blank. And then, I remember when you were a blank, this feud started when blank, and then we have declarations about our character. So we go through this little thing that really quickly sort of frames a story of, okay, it was a time of war. We're standing upon our ancestors' graves. I remember when you were nothing but a child, and this feud started when you would refuse to see me as anything but. Well, we've said 4 sentences and we have a story. We know where we are, but what happens is then we go way back in time to see where this started. And then when we get back to the front of our story, back to the duel, we repeat those same lines and suddenly they have far, far more weight to them because over the last hour, we've informed all of those little decisions. That is adding our little chorus to our story. Thank you, Chuck Palahniuk. You're a phenomenal writer. So, that's our first little thing. But then I looked at mechanically the scenes and it was, I need to mechanically make the three act structure happen. So how do we make the mechanical three act structure happen? Okay. I came up with five scenes that then, if played out correctly, are going to demand a emotional compelling story happens. And that is, the five scenes are the time we were friends, the time you crossed the line, the time you failed me, the time we could have fixed things, the time we knew it would come to blood. So what this does is it maps out our entire story structure for us. And you'll play the game in these five scenes in that order. So we start out as friends. Why were we friends? Why are we good? And then we go on to, oh, now there's a divide. You crossed the line. We no longer can see eye to eye. And then the time you failed me, now not only do I have an ideological disagreement, you've personally done something that's failed me. You've failed me when I needed it. I'm now very, very heated at you, but we have to cool it down. So then we hit the time we could have fixed things, which is, okay, we disagree. We've had our problems. But you know, we were friends once. It could be okay. Which then is what makes the fifth scene even more impactful of now it gets far, far worse. Now it gets to the point of even though we could have been friends, we're not. And this will come to death. So those were our five scenes. So we go, okay, now we've got our next layer on there of, okay, here's how we tell the story. But then we get to how do we get the players to mechanically be incentivized to do exactly what they're supposed to do in this scene. You can't just tell them, okay, this scene is the time you cross the line, go. It doesn't really work that way. The genius of using mechanics to inform roleplay is to do just that. What mechanics can I do that will make you and I cross the line with each other? How do we make that happen? So the thought came, okay, if we are going to, and I should have said this earlier, the core concept is in each scene, you either build up dice or hatred. So if you succeed at your objective, you build up dice. If you fail at your objective, you build up hatred. So mechanically, they want to do something. They want to get these dice because it's going to give them a better chance of winning the duel. And people just like big piles of dice. It's a very subconscious thing. It's like, yes, you have more dice than me. I want to narrow that gap. I want more dice. So what I did to do this is I designed a mechanic where you have to achieve, the only way to quote unquote win a scene is to get your opponent to do something through roleplay. So in each scene, you have a list of choices of objectives that you secretly make. And there'll be things like, get your opponent to admit they were wrong or get your opponent to walk out on an important event. So now what happens is, it's the time we were friends. We were supposed to be playing out a scene where we're happy. And my secret objective is get your opponent to give you a personal item. Your secret objective is get me to promise to do something for you in the future. There's no other way if we are trying to do those objectives but us to play out this scene of us being friends. Because I can only do that through being friendly. Then as we build up, you know, it's the time we knew it would come to blood. Get your opponent to do a true act of evil. Get your opponent to draw blood from another person. I am actively antagonizing you and you are actively antagonizing me, and that forces that scene to be what it should be. And if you follow all of this through, then you have a system where the only way to play it ends in we started as friends and now we are just as bitter rivals as we can, and it can only end in one of us or maybe both of us dying. So I was gonna say that's the short version. That was actually pretty long-winded, but that's okay. Mechanically how it came about.
Nice. Are those goals, are they randomized or do you get to pick?
You get to pick, and how it works is there's actually four choices in each scene at this moment. The game is obviously still very much going through play testing, to do stuff. And the choices are ranked in difficulty. So there's one dice, two dice, three dice, and four dice. So the four die one is really hard to do. The one die one is actually the easiest. Dice two through four are essentially written choices. So each of you have those same options. So you'll have three choices. I secretly pick one. You secretly pick one. You can only score if you get the one that you pick before the scene. The one dice option is always, though, you can write in your own objective.
Nice.
So you can write in your own objective if it fits better with the story, you have something specific you're trying to do, but it's the least amount of dice.
Okay, yeah. As I've listened to, I think, two of the playthroughs that you've done so far, and it seems like, I think in the first scene, everyone always picks the same goal.
Yes, and that's the wonderful magic of playtesting. It's like, everyone's picking the same. That means there's a balance issue, there's a wording issue. It's either too invocative and the other things aren't invocative enough, or how invocative it is compared to the dice reward is too high. So this is the wonderful stuff we learn through playtesting. It's like, that scene needs some rework on those to make their, make all of the choices equally interesting.
Yeah, I wonder if it's that they're not interesting enough, or if it's the first scene, everyone's just sort of feeling out how this works, so we'll go for this one.
There is actually a lot of truth to what you're saying, because what I believe it is, and I don't have the papers in front of me, I think it's the two dice option. Most people take, and I think that's actually my knee-jerk reaction is the thought of, okay, it's a new game for people playing it, they want to go, the safe route, but the one dice is pick your own, which still feels a little uncomfortable for the first time playing it, so I pick the lowest achievable of dice because it's an easy in, which I think is a very fair assessment to it, and part of the fun of designing games is that something that I'm just, completely okay with first-time players doing that, or does it need to be mechanically changed?
Yeah, it would be interesting to see how people change the way they play once they've played through once. Then they don't feel like they need to feel out in that first scene. I know how this game works. I can reach for bigger numbers. I can reach for the harder goals.
And for the people that have played multiple times, that's what I have found is once they've played it once, then they start getting the crazy ideas of, ooh, let me try this, and ooh, let me try this, which of course is wonderful and makes for a very, very fun game. So will everyone do that? Does there even mechanical change? That is why we playtest.
Yeah. I'd be curious to hear people who are playing with this game, what they've experienced. Just go and creep everybody's game. So you mentioned that it is still very much in the playtest mode. How finished do you feel like you have to be with a game before you can take it to Kickstarter?
That is personal opinion, very dependent on the product itself. If it was something like a board game, I would want it, as we were developing a board game, we're going to have it 95% done, that within the first week or two of the Kickstarter, it's ready to go to print, all the art's done, all the illustrations done, everything like that. With an RPG book of this size, because this is going to be, it's a small pamphlet style book. It's, it's going to be somewhere between 50 and 60 pages. They're half page sheets. It's a much smaller project. I don't think it needs to be in necessarily that state of completion. What it needs to be is a product that gets delivered within a relatively short period of time that has high production values and provides the quality experience that people want. Those are my core goals with it. Now, what we actually were going into the project is probably about 75% done with the art and illustration for the project prior to launch. The writing side of it, the actual text of the book, is about the same, between 75 and 85% done. So what we have to do that we've been working on is finish the last of the text, and a lot of that's modifications based on what I've learned from playtesting, like the hatred mechanic of the game has changed three different times now, as I've been dialing that in to try and get it right, and things like that. And then, as well as, we're going to have some special contributors if we hit our stretch goals, Ben Warner, John Wick, and Ken Height, that'll be adding to it as well. And then the other big thing is just, we have a little bit of the illustration to wrap up, and then, of course, Palomi gets to kick it in high gear with layout.
Yes.
Nice. All right. And it sounds like, Palomi, you're behind a lot of the Kickstarter organizing too. Things like stretch goals and working with a product that is, still wrapping up. How do you set up a project to accommodate for that? Like, how do you express that, the state that the project is in, and how do you plan for reasonable stretch goals and things like that?
A lot of question asking. I mean, I think the couple of days before we were wanting to press the big green button on the Kickstarter, I was working pretty closely with Jim Merritt on making sure, you know, verbiage was right, making sure kind of those social goals were established and were reasonable to both mm-hmm. him and our Jim McClure. And it was a lot of kind of leveraging what we had already too, right? So one of the things with this project is we had a 3-week timeline, and we had we had like 2 splash pages and a cover page, but our illustrator is also working on the other 3 splash pages. So we wanted to get people excited about kind of both the game and visually what it's going to look like, because I've seen a lot of Kickstarters that they have really good mechanics, but they don't really show people what the actual end product is going to look like, or they don't spend a lot of time on the presence that they have visually on Kickstarter, and so mm-hmm. people don't get as excited about it. Like, that's just the way it works sometimes, I think. People like to see what they're getting into.
Mm-hmm.
So balancing not showing too much of what we have, like, right out of the gate, but also getting people excited about what we've already done. So that was kind of our social goals sort of impetus, was trying to make sure that we were like, hey, guys, we have more to show you, but if you want to see it, you have to do these things so that you can see it. But the other thing with kind of creating the Kickstarter was I was working with Jim on what we wanted sort of the main body of it to say, but at the end of the day, I was still making sure everything was input into the Kickstarter, like the goals and how the language was written for social goals and stretch goals and even just the backer, you know, stuff like that. So it was interesting because this was the first time that I ever had like free reign of the back end of a Kickstarter. I think Jim was just like, hey, I added you to the Kickstarter, and I'm like, okay. And I go to the Kickstarter page, and I'm like, oh, Jim, you gave me everything. All of this phenomenal cosmic power. I was just like, okay, don't screw anything up.
And I think that's, I mean, in my personal opinion, that's a key to, you know, making a team work that's going to come together into a project like this, is everyone has to have input. Everyone has to feel like they have the ability to express the things that they personally, you know, are passionate about within the project. And, you know, what we found is, you know, all 4 of the, I'm going to say the core members of the team, you know, myself, Jim Merritt, Palomi and Pavonis, the illustrator, you know, every person has gotten to add to it, and there's a large amount of trust that comes with working in a team like that, mm-hmm. of going, okay, Palomi, here's the Kickstarter page. You know, I've never even met you face to face in person. We've just been, you know, working together for, oh goodness, it's almost been 8 months, hasn't
almost,
it?
Almost, wow, yeah.
It was like December last year. That's insane to me. Yep. Ooh, time. You know, but here, take this thing. I trust you. Go run with it. Do awesome things because you're an awesome person. You know, and having that, being able to do that is, you know, a lot of it's having trust with the people that you work with.
Yeah. Well, and I think from a designer perspective, I appreciate that too, because you'll hear like designer client horror stories all the time. But at the core of it is making sure that there's trust in that relationship, that, hey, wherever my expertise are ending, I'm relying on you for your expertise to kind of pick up where I'm leaving off. And I really liked that about this project, because there was that sense of like, hey, this is what you're good at, so you do that thing that you're good at. And I'm like, yes, I am good at this. I will do that thing that I'm good at. Kind of just being like, okay, I'm the champion of this project now. I need to make it happen. And feeling good about being able to help someone in that way is kind of why I love doing the freelance work that I do, just because I think about it as being a mercenary. I you know, it's RPGs, guys. They're real.
Highest of art known to mankind.
Yeah, it's just like, hey, someone is hiring me to do this thing that they can't do themselves, and I feel really good about being responsible for helping them make that thing a reality.
Oh. And it really shows, like, It's such a visually strong looking Kickstarter and project. It's cohesive across the Kickstarter and the website, and everything is organized so well. Like, this teamwork really shows.
And awesome. It's a lot of, and again, these are more things that I give Palomi wonderful credit for, because I swear I am the worst person in the world to work for, because not because I'm like the evil tyrant boss, but I'm just the opposite. I come in like floating into the room like, hey, I want this to have this certain feel of like heavy story. So if you could do me art and illustration that has feel of heavy story, that'd be great. Thanks, Palomi. Get on that. Awesome. You know, and that is as a tribute to her and Pavonis's talent of to be able to take, you know, sentences like that and turn it into an actual like cohesive thing, because that's as much as I know to say.
Mm. Oh man. If you talk to me on a regular basis, that's literally exactly how I talk. I'm like, if I'm telling a story, even if it's just like a funny like anecdote or something, sometimes I lose people all the time because they're just like, Plummy, I get that you're really like, you think this is hilarious, but none of us are getting it because we're so bogged down in how funny this is. So I am the queen of emotionally charged wishy-washy statements. So I totally get it. It's really easy to translate since it's my I'm fluent in that language.
That's wonderful. It sounds like a really good team.
Yeah.
That just coalesced here. That's awesome. Since we're talking about the Kickstarter, do you guys want to plug any of the things that you can get, that backers could get, or stretch goals that you were working towards?
I guess so. You know, for one, I want to say that the game is very, very inexpensive. You know, the PDF copy of this game is $10. The hardcover, the physical copy of the book is $15. You know, it is a very low price point. $20 gets you both of those. For $25, you get the PDF, you get the physical game book, and you get a pad of 50 character sheets, which are very, very important, because when your character dies in it, you have to rip your character sheet in half and hand it to your opponent.
Never because using those character sheets.
Ritualistic gameplay is awesome. And then you can go even higher levels than that for is it $35 or $40? I should know my own Kickstarter, right? It's for $35. You can get two booklets and the pad of character sheets. So that way it's sort of everything you need for both people to play the game. And then your even higher goals for $100, you get all that. Plus I'll run a game for it online for you. For $250, you get all that. I run the game online for you and you get to name one of the example characters. So we've actually already had two of the four limited of those already go away.
Ooh.
So yes, if you want your own samurai from your own game, to be part of it, or if you're JPC and you just want to name it Thighbrows, you can do that too.
Yes.
You tell me the name, I'll put it in the book. And then the highest goal for anyone who wants to solely fund this game themselves, for $5,000, you get all the game stuff. I'm going to come crash on your house for a weekend, run games for you, buy you pizza, and then at one random point in some point in the future of your lives, I'm going to order pizza again for you. You won't know when it's coming, but it'll come. So that's my own little joke one. But those are the backer goals. And then for the stretch goals, couple of the ones that we're getting really close to, while the game is based on samurai, it can work very well with sort of any sort of dual setting. So at $7,500, which at the time of recording, we are really, really close to, Toby Abond, the original creator, is going to do a few additional settings for us. At $10,000, Ken Height's going to do a gunslinger version of it. And at $12,500, John Wick, of course, the guy who did Seventh Sea, is going to do a setting that he's keeping secret until we hit that goal. So we have to hit it to find out exactly what it is. So those are the funding stretch goals, but the social stretch goals are like super, super easy to hit. You know, one of the big ones is we're trying to get people to follow the Third Act Publishing, Twitter. And we've already hit our first goal of 100, which is what opened up, Toby Abond giving a single moment a free PDF copy to everyone that backed the Kickstarter. But if we hit 250 followers on the Third Act Publishing Twitter, I'm going to do a professional wrestling setting for it, which I'm kind of stupid excited about too, because I go, why not make a game that does both of my loves? All I need to get is the licensing of Gundam Wing, and we'll do that one too. Maybe, Maybe I'll call it Mech Wing or something like that. We'll figure it out.
There you go. Oh, there's a way. There is definitely a way.
I'm trying not to get sued on my first Kickstarter, though, so yeah. we will see. But yeah, I mean, the best thing to do is go to Kickstarter/Reflections. You can check everything out. But again, even if this isn't your cup of tea, but you just want to support indie publishing, go, you know, do some of the social stretch goals. It takes all of 10 seconds to click follow on a Twitter or hit share on Twitter or, you know, share on Facebook. So, you know, only takes a moment.
Awesome. I'm glad that you brought up the alternate settings, because I've been having some discussions with people about how to change Reflections. This is a podcast about hacking and modifying. and so we're very curious as to what people will come up with for alternate settings for this game. But we got into a little bit of a debate, I guess, about what is a suitable alternate setting for this particular game. So do you have any tips on what would work?
Yes.
Or what might not work?
Any setting that involves two people that are ultimately going to come to some conflict that needs resolved, as broad of a term as that is, this game will work for. So what are some of the, I've heard some crazy off the wall ones that I think are just absolutely amazing.
So this might be just me imposing my own thoughts on it, but it struck me as, you know, doing it with samurai, doing it with wrestlers, doing it with, you know, Western gunslingers. It seemed like it was a setting built for two opposing forces that may be extremely similar. So like the discussion I was having, we were talking, oh, how about superheroes and versus like a Batman Catwoman kind of situation. I was like, I don't know. That feels like a very obvious good evil dynamic that I don't know if that would be too.
And I think they work in any setting because storytelling is storytelling, and the structure of Reflections is, I mean, it's the basic three act structure that's been cut apart. You know, what we're experimenting around with is little differences that are going to pop up, you know, in setting to setting, little rules differences that'll happen. So, you know, in a situation that you describe like that of having, you know, one clearly good and one clearly evil, I think the system will still absolutely shine. What may have to happen is there may just have to be a different list of choices that the good side has and a different set of choices that the evil side has that make it work, as opposed to both having, you know, having the same choices. So I think it's very adaptable in that way.
All right, heroes, get on it.
Can I share my yes. favorite alternate setting that someone has proposed to me that I just thought was
yes,
brilliant.
Please.
Okay. And that is a DMV driving test.
Yes.
Where one is the student that's trying to get his driver's license and one is the DMV instructor. Like, isn't that just brilliant?
Oh, it's so good.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So like, that's so awesome that it may have to make it into the core book. We'll see. But I love the concept of that. And then if you want to even see more ridiculous, me and Sendon, she's a super geek. We played ourselves during the great podcast war. So actually, while we only used the samurai, we actually did it as, you know, ourselves in this fictional podcast war.
That's fantastic.
Oh man.
Paloma, what would you play?
Oh my goodness. I don't, you know, I always, whenever I play a new RPG, I'm always going to play as my warrior self, fighting against some other warrior self. Though I've noticed that I have a trend towards fighting mages. So watch out, mages.
Okay.
I don't apparently like you very much.
Ooh, all right. Kind of a Templar apostate.
It's setting. Very much so. Very much so.
We might need to borrow this. And it's definitely, of course, I see lots of people, you know, it suits for Jedi, of course.
Oh, yes.
So that's going to be a popular one. But that's awesome. This is such a flexible sounding system. Just the like I said, the games that I've heard, it's great. I have to get to Senda's, but all of them will be linked in the show notes. Every actual play I can find by the time this comes out.
Yes, because at the time this coming out, we've done actual plays on the Third Act Publishing site. Actually has myself and Emily from Hero's Journey, if those who listen to the Hero's Journey podcast that I did, do a shortened version of it. We actually only do 3 of the 5 scenes, but then you can hear it on She's a Super Geek, which is, as I said, it's a wildly different game, and it's kind of dependent on you listening to one of their early episodes. They're all out of Bubblegum 1, so if you go into it blind and feel a little lost, don't worry, it's kind of based on that episode. but you can hear it normally played as well as on the RPG Academy, the Party of One podcast, as well as on One Shot, where me and James D'Amato, of course, no one ever wants to hear me and James D'Amato play Samurai for an hour, but if for some reason you really wanted to, you can, of course, hear it on the home show.
Excellent. All right, guys. So this is going to come out actually after Gen Con. Hopefully, if you were there at Gen Con, you got to see Jim. Do you have any plans to be at conventions in the future?
Yes, I will be at, let's see,
either one of you. Yeah.
Yeah. Gen Con was my third convention of the year. I have two more planned, which are actually back to back in November, which is Metatopia. Of course, a double exposure event that I'm so super excited because, I will maybe running this game some at Metatopia, but it probably is going to be some other secret project that hasn't come out yet that's going to be play tested there. So if you want to come to Metatopia, you'll get to play the new and exciting things that are coming, as well as I'm sure I'll be running this some. And then also I will be at a Catacon here in Dayton, Ohio, and I most certainly will be running this and Terrible RPG and my wrestling RPG and everything else that I normally do at Catacon. Is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful amount of fun.
I am so excited because I am going to Metatopia for the first time ever. It's my first RPG-related convention, so I'm going in completely fresh and new.
The best.
But I am so excited. I've been trying to figure out how to make a Catacon work as well, but I don't think I'll be able to do it this year. But I really hope I can go next year. But Metatopia for sure. I'll see you guys there.
Awesome. We're going to have a party.
Yay. Awesome.
Palomi, where can we find you online?
Oh, everywhere online. mostly Twitter, at PalomiSP. And then I have a website, PalomiPrayTap.com. But, you know, that's just work. Nobody cares about that. My Twitter is probably the best place to get in touch with me, just because I talk a lot on Twitter, especially about my Padme feels. Oh, gosh. Yeah. So many Padme feels.
Twitter's a good place to be, and people can find you and hire you to work on their
awesome
games.
Yes, hashtag hireable.
Yay! She does such a good job! And... All right, Jim, where can we find you?
Of course, you can find me here on the One Shot Podcast Network every week, of course, doing Talking Tabletop. if you want to directly interact with me, Twitter is sort of my social media of choice, at GM Jim McClure. That's McClure. And if you want to contact me directly, in some places you can use more than 140 characters, jim@talkingtabletop.net is my email address that I use. As normally, I'm pretty quick to the response on it. So if you send something there, I do a decent job as far as keeping up with that. But yeah, email or Twitter is the best way to contact me. And of course, at the time of this thing coming out, you know, the Kickstarter's still live. We are fully funded. We are going through these stretch goals. So anything that you can do will be a wonderful help.
Awesome. And all of that will be linked. So go to this Kickstarter. It's going to be awesome.
Oh, I have one more call out.
Yeah.
After August 26th, you can find me and Kevin Bates at Mouse Guardians on Twitter, at Mouse Guardians, the Twitter. Yeah. And we're just starting a Mouse Guard podcast. It's not really that big a deal, but, you know, whatever.
what do you do? Is you just talking about Mouse Guard? Come on, what is it?
We're playing Mouse Guard. And let me tell you that Mouse Guard is the cutest game I have ever played in my life. Every day, there is always an instance where I'm like, I can't play this game anymore because I'm going to die from how cute it is. So, but I like the game quite a bit just because it's cute, but it also allows you to play an RPG as an adult. So you're not just focused on the fact that you're adorable little mice, you're also dealing with adorable little mice problems. So.
I'm so looking forward to this.
I'm really excited to start releasing episodes. We've got art and everything.
Did you do the art?
No, we got Molly Ostertag to do the art, and she did
an
excellent job. It is tops.
Awesome. Cool. Then we'll link that, and if it's not out quite yet, then we'll shout about it on Twitter.
Yes, totally. So, there will be lots of yelling.
Yay. Oh, well, thank you both so much. This has been awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for having me on, Megan.
Thanks again to Jim and Palomi for being on the show. The Kickstarter for Reflections is live, funded, and just $15 for a physical copy. Catch Jim on his weekly podcast, Talking Tabletop, and look forward to Palomi's Mouse Guard actual play, Mouse Guardians, coming in just a few weeks. Again, check the show notes for some Reflections actual plays on some of the best AP podcasts around. They range from serious to completely bananas, which bodes well for whatever way you want to play it. That's it for this week, heroes. You can find Modifier on Twitter at ModifierPodcast or at the headquarters at modifierpodcast.tumblr.com. You can send comments, questions, or contribution suggestions to modifierpodcast@gmail.com. If you like the show, please consider leaving a review on iTunes, as that helps more people find us. Modifier is a proud member of the One Shot Podcast Network, an amazing family of RPG podcasts that includes incredible shows like One Shot, Campaign, Backstory, and Talking Tabletop. Modifier's theme music was created by my favorite Bothan, Kat Greenfield, whose myriad talents are on display at katgreenfield.com. Next time on Modifier, Mark Richardson takes Apocalypse World to the limit with Headspace. See you then!